While the ghost hunters sorted out their luggage, she headed up the long walkway to the split stairs encircling yet another statue. This one of Cupid hovering over some unsuspecting, headless, Venus-like, half-clad female. There were 15 steps. She counted them. As she reached the landing, she glanced ahead at the dark and cavernous entryway culminating in a lone arched wooden door. It looked like it belonged on a medieval castle. Pausing to regather her courage, she glanced back at the ghost hunters, who were still unloading the taxi van. The scene reminded her of the TV commercial where tens of children kept stepping out of a minivan, except instead of kids, the ghost hunters pulled out suitcase after suitcase. Shaking her head, she looked around for a doorbell, then gave herself a mental kick for thinking she might find one at a place like this. She eyed the elaborate door knocker, a sense of foreboding holding her back from grabbing it. She almost felt as though she'd traveled back in time to when door knockers, elaborate or otherwise, were the norm. Slowly, she raised her arm. She touched the smooth metal surface of the knocker. When at last she took hold of the semicircular arm and lifted it, she didn't see how it could make enough noise, in a place of this size, to alert the occupants to someone's arrival. But whatever. She allowed the arm to drop. A deep boom resonated from the knocker. She jumped. The racket echoed all around her. So that's how they managed to hear it. Enjoying the momentary sense of power, she grabbed the knocker and this time used a little force in sending it down. The resulting cacophony sounded like thunder, and as she glanced about to see the results of her efforts, she noticed she'd drawn the attention of the cab driver and the ghost hunters, who had paused in their labors to look up at her. She grinned at them and held up her fingers in an okay sign. When she turned back, she discovered the door had been silently opened and Heathcliff, Mr. De Winter, Mr. Rochester, or some other gothic hero materialized before her with a perfection of both sulkiness and arrogance and, yeah, a deadly combination of masculine beauty and gut-wrenching sexiness. Aristocratic, broody, moody, and sexy as sin. O.M.G. He raised an imperfectly shaped eyebrow, the corner of which turned up in an unusual fan shape, and like the mansion, there was a lack of symmetry in his other eyebrow as well as the features of his face. But most notable of all, besides a patrician nose, sensual lips, and the mossy green of his eyes, was his jaw. Franny didn't usually think about a man's jaw, and certainly she'd never thought about a jaw in terms of poetry. But good Lord, this man's jaw was something to behold. It anchored his face and features and gave him a look of nobility of purpose and spirit. Wowzers. Said jaw also, however, appeared to be angry. Franny gulped, speechless, for once under the scrutiny of this man. Somehow she had to find her words. She cleared her throat as he waited impatiently for her to say something.
I'm Franny Fielding with the Global Spy.
There. She'd managed to say something, and she hadn't made a fool of herself. Yet. The man eyed her, slowly traversing from the top of her head down to her Skechers-clad feet. She'd been checked out in this way before, back in her foster care days when some jerk, okay, Mrs. Mahoney of the Child Welfare Division, implied she wasn't a worthwhile being, that she was below scorn or less than significant. And, as then, it made her mad.